Hello, welcome back to Heavy Typing. I'm Frank Hagen. I hope you enjoyed the first two episodes of this podcast, reading from my stories, Avenue of the Punchlines, and Stay Where You Are. This week, we're going to shift gears, so to speak, and begin reading from my novel, Marked for Harm. This is a 21-chapter novel, unless there's some kind of major rewriting that I do during the recording of it. Let's hope it stays that way. Things go sideways for an unmotivated private detective and former adult entertainer who finds himself entrusted with the sacred legacy of a violent sex cult in this erotic paranormal thriller. Archibald Fat Cox traverses a gloaming world of magical surrealism and absurd conspiracy as he attempts to solve the murder of a woman whom he may have fallen in love with, only to find himself a pawn in a game with opaque players. This novel is an invitation to be turned on and disturbed, to find oneself laughing and crying at turns. Marked for Harm. Adagietto. Local man is reported missing. November 13. Archibald Russell Cox, 43 years of age and resident of this district, has been reported missing. A private detective and former adult entertainer, also known to his associates as Fat Cox, has not been seen or communicated with for at least 6 weeks, Detective Wobbins told press. Due to the nature of Mr. Cox's recent work, authorities are concerned malfeasance may play a role in his disappearance. Mr. Cox was in the news several years ago when he contributed to the arrest of the so-called Silly Face murderer. Please contact the police with any pertinent information. Chapter 1. Keep Coming Back to the End. November is an unpleasant month to die. Certainly, it is thematically appropriate, with its permafrost sky and craggy nude trees. This is an exhausted month filled with anxiety. The sugary hangover of Halloween is yet to be brushed off people's teeth, while the heartless holidays loom, wielding anticipation like a weapon. In a sense, the year is already over, with people sleepwalking through their family obligations, hoping for relief. It is a time of stress, unrealistic expectations, and useless nostalgia. People's stacks are piled high and teetering, their limits reached. A person becoming deceased as their loved ones limp to the end of this bleak festival are an unwelcome nuisance. There are tears, but there are also shrugs. Hands thrown into the air, sleep-filled nights and days. The guilt which has been dragging these people through the year's end now begins to rot within them. The money is already tight. The trauma, a kind of poison gas that no window can air out, an association for every coming holiday season. If you have the choice, hold out and die in late February. There is plenty of space for grieving, and the coming spring gives people permission to move on. For a loner such as myself, of course, things tend to be a lot less complicated. And when you're dead, the complications are someone else's problem entirely. There's that, at least. But with regard to myself, I honestly am not quite sure. And now I find my memory is pouring out like a conversation. Some sort of one-sided Socratic dialogue to which I have very little control. It is as if the restlessness of my mind is dancing away into the coming light. From this shadowy corner of persistence, I find myself at the center of strange phenomena and subject to the strangeness of my soul grieving. It is almost an unbearable burden, and I have found myself struggling to process the intense thoughts and the feelings. I keep coming back to the end as an obsession. To say that I feel remorse would be gracious. I do feel it immensely, but the feeling is more akin to physical pain. And yet, I am somehow disconnected from the physicality of it. Not here, in this land of endless light and endless waiting. I don't doubt or lose sight of the fact that the sorcerer likely pursues me even now, whatever this is. Although to tell you how or why is also a struggle. And the memories come up like bad food. And even as I watch and relate them, my mind fades. Or perhaps it is my being entirely that is fading. Yet I keep coming back to the end, and I keep coming back to her. I had been living a sticky sexual life without limits, a dysphoric dream where no one seemed to know what love was. I didn't need anyone to tell me that what I was doing was right. I knew that it wasn't. Fear was still a stranger, and I was a philosopher without a philosophy. The revelations arrived without revelation, but change was coming. My metamorphosis was about to begin. It was in a field of sunflowers. She had taken off her clothes and begged, needlessly, for me to take her. This was almost the end for summer, and autumn was on its way as well. I sat in a sort of lazy lotus position below a canopy of gigantic sunflowers. In shade cast by the large seeded discs and pointed yellow petals. She was soft like a wavering breeze, giggling like a brook, beautiful and licentious, and she was wet when she climbed on top of me. The light of the setting sun reached through in dazzling beams which superimposed with her glorious smile. Sunflowers drifted gently, swaying in the breeze. It's everything, she had said, tears flowing onto my shoulder as she kissed at my neck, out of breath. She moaned with unconstrained pleasure, making pained gasps, my engorged penis fully within her. She was spread open, obedient to the suffering, willful to the jubilation. I felt her with my rough hands and I leaned her backward, examining her taut, near-perfect body. The strange power of late summer seemed to literally cling to the air like humidity. It was on our skin with our sweat, and oil sliding between our caresses. We fucked, engaged with our animal imaginations, at the bottom of that floral sea, breathing deep the fragrances. She had cried out in the rural quiet, orgasming in succession. With every rapturous undulation, she moved further into the interior of herself. A pale swatch of moon was up in the early evening sky. It was as if I were tied to a ghost and we were closing in on eternity. She screamed gutturally, throwing herself violently up and down, opening herself in celebration. She was oozing. I worked diligently to keep her from flying away, holding her hips. And she gripped my heavy torso with all of her strength as if riding a bull, as if she were going to push her hands straight through my flesh. We were like an out-of-control metronome, increasing exponentially in tempo. She exulted loudly with each full descent, filling herself deeply. She was flush purple in the coming twilight, stretched, our bodies clapping. "Strangle me," she told me with a quiet breath. Barely able to get the words out. I moved my busy hands automatically, putting my gluey fingers around her burning neck. I felt how alive she was. Her heart hammered fierce pulses through bulging arteries. We rolled, thrashing stalks and crushing sunflowers as we turned. And I applied pressure with my grip and continued to thrust within her wildly. I took my hands from her throat momentarily, wanting to adjust my position, but she growled and grabbed for them. "Strangle me," she insisted. I returned with an increased grip, squeezing hard. She took on the rootless smile of an ecstatic. She was expelling fluid in orgasm, soaking the thirsty ground, as, with experienced skill, I controlled her to the edge of unconsciousness. Her eyes rolled back until only the whites showed. That was enough, I thought. I withdrew from her and stood up. She crawled onto her knees where, from the grog of her desire, she licked my skin, searching, and took me, savage and pulsating, also with difficulty, into her mouth. She gagged hot and tempestuously, low in her throat, but drew me deeper. Suddenly, snot dripping from her nostrils, she pushed me away, punching me in the gut. She was sobbing, but this was not jubilation. When she spoke, she was angry. "What is it?" I asked, perplexed. She wiped a stream of tears and a silken thread of stray cum from her face. "What, do you think I love you, Cox?" she asked. "What is wrong, Summer?" I asked. "Of course not." Perhaps this was my moment of failure. She sobbed. There was a wild look in her eyes, like that of a spooked animal about to panic. "I wanted you to strangle me," she yelled, struggling to scream while gasping on tears. "I wanted you to be the one." "Summer," I said, squatting down, wanting to console her. But she was backing away from me, making high-pitched wailing sounds. Then, in an instant, she scattered off into the adjoining woods where I pursued her. I ran through the falling dark, following the sound of her trajectory, leaves being crushed, branches breaking. Brush and barbed vines scratched my naked skin, burrs attached to my thighs and back. I called after Summer, but she was too far away to trace. I could no longer hear her, and I saw no movement in the deep blues and greens of waning twilight. Still, I couldn't simply leave her alone in the woods. Something was seriously wrong. This was not the delicate free spirit I had come to know. I kept searching, moving at random through the brush, pushing back rough undergrowth and heavy branches loaded with leafy twigs. I stepped without caution, fallen acorns, twisted roots, and chance stones stabbing at my feet. Several times I decided that there was no hope of finding her, but resumed my search with increasing guilt. Horrible anxiety overtook me as pursuit turned into desperation. Hours passed. The late evening sky was pitch when, to the sound of dogs barking in the dark, I walked out of a throng of trees, covered in cuts, seed burrs, and ticks. She would turn up, I told myself. I did not want to leave, but I also did not know what else to do. I gathered up our clothing, got mostly dressed, and walked to the grassy shoulder of the highway where the old truck she had borrowed was parked. I didn't even know who to return it to. I couldn't decide if it was best to leave her clothing behind so that she would have them if she came back, but I chose to throw them into the bed of the truck. I didn't really want some farmer to stumble onto her discarded clothes and try to make sense of the mess I had made. The horrible image of some farmer stumbling upon her naked and confused also passed through my mind as I decided that it was time to leave. No offense to farmers. The universe being the beautiful mystery that it is, I wound up stepping onto a pile of fresh shit and proceeded to slip while going to get inside the cab of the truck. In opaque blindness, I managed to smear it all over myself. It was warm on my skin. I looked around to see if those big farm dogs were nearby. Of course they weren't. I tried to wipe the shit off with little success. I just made it worse, and somehow I got it all over my face. I drove back to my pathetic office apartment to the quiet serenade of tranquil evening. The radio didn't work. I had the windows down with my head tilted out of the window to allay the stench, hair whipping back in the dewy pleasure of the cool night air. Stridulating crickets bowed their endless drone. Just the one dim street light was functioning when I pulled up to park. I stepped out, and in the sick amber light, I noticed her, asleep in the bed of the truck, the clothing I had thrown in strewn on top of her. She was shivering and clammy to the touch. Her ass and legs were caked with dried shit. I made a relieved cooing noise upon seeing her sweet face, knowing and perhaps hoping that I went unheard before I carried her upstairs and inside, where I sat her in the bottom of the bathtub. I had her leaning against the back wall when I climbed in to take a hot shower. I stood over her and I cleaned myself. I lathered up more than usual, working the shit and blood off. It was especially difficult to get it out from under the nails. I winced a little as I picked the ticks off and washed them down the drain, hoping I was finding them all. I don't think you can really kill them. I was lathering soap on my hands with the intention of bending down to begin bathing Summer next when I noticed that she was awake and sitting upright. Even then, she wore a naughty, exhausted grin. She took my dick in her hand and stroked it gently. She was filthy, almost disgusting, and extremely tired looking. Dark bags under her eyes. There was a handprint smear of shit on her cheek from when I'd propped her in the tub. Gone was her youth, but not the intoxication of it. "I still hate you, fat cock," she said, as she kissed and stroked me. I became erect and she went slowly about blowing me. It was less of a methodical procedure than it was an exhausted one. And yet she looked at me as she went about it with those tired eyes. I put my lathered hands in her tangled hair and massaged her scalp while she performed her slow magic. And after a few moments, I lifted her up by the waist and kissed her bruised, filthy neck. I saw that there was a huge tick burrowed into her shoulder as we kissed, tongues passionately forking in our sour mouths. She tasted strongly of ejaculate in the long night. I placed her between myself and the shower wall and pressed myself against her. She was raw but accepted me, twisting her legs around mine. We fucked slowly, fatigued, shower water running cold on my ass. It was pooled around my feet, freezing my toes, but we persisted. When she finally came, I allowed myself to release inside of her. I reached behind me with one arm to shut the freezing water off. "We have to wait a bit for more hot water," I told her. "Stay like this then. Stay inside of me," she said, putting her head on my shoulder. I pulled her tightly to myself. Her breathing was quiet by my ear, and we said nothing, her arms and legs wrapped around me. However, I couldn't hold her forever, and after a few minutes, I lowered her back into the drained tub where, from my knees, I picked the ticks off of her, lifting her hair and meticulously scanning her skin. One by one, I removed them. Tiny trails of blood ran down her moist skin. She did not complain, even with the worst of it. With warm water replenished, I took the shower head off of its mount to wash the dirt and shit off of her. I kissed her bruises and bathed her with palliative care. Finally, after shampooing her hair with discount grocery store shampoo, I dried us both off and carried her to the bed where she turned onto her side and fell immediately to sleep. I lightly massaged the muscles on either side of her spine and around her neck, not enough to rouse her. Maybe I was doing it to assure myself. I felt something inside of myself that I did not recognize, and it was breaking. "Don't worry," I said, trying to dissuade myself from experiencing any kind of personal revelation. "That wasn't the first time I've had shit on my dick." Alone with my poor, abject humor, I turned the bedside lamp off, went to find a bottle of Glenlivet in the dark, and poured myself a glass. In my chair by the bed, I sipped the whiskey slowly and watched the sunrise through cheap slatted blinds. Not for the first time, there was a beautiful, confused woman dreaming in my bed. Parallel lines of sunlight seeped through the blinds and moved slowly across the sheets. The covers moved slowly with each of her breaths. I filled another glass with overly extravagant scotch, rested on my swollen belly, and drank slow sips as the room filled with light. I had almost wished that I smoked, and I decided that I would start a habit within the week. There was a time when I was paid to have sex on film, and I loved to have sex, almost more than anything, but I was finding myself confused. Life catches up to us all, and I felt, sitting by the side of the bed, that it was catching up to me. I wondered who I was, really, without sex, and what was the point of any of it. I was tired of this one thing defining me, and it certainly didn't bring any lasting happiness. Always with the party over, alone with the void. Something else was catching up to me as well, hunting me, the shadow. But I had yet to comprehend any of this. As the morning bloomed, I carefully pulled the sheet down enough to examine the bruises on Summer's body, and especially her neck. I lightly touched the soft skin below her ears, running a finger down and along her clavicle. She seemed so fragile now that she was asleep. I went into the bathroom, took a tired piss, and came back into the cramped room where I slid open the drawers of my small bureau and pulled out some clothes. Standing in my socks, I went and poured another glass of Glenny. I pinched the slats open to look through the blinds into the streets below, which were starting to fill with traffic. Early morning pedestrians perused the broken sidewalk with unwitting purpose. I found my shoes under the bed and sat in the chair to lace them up. I took a tie from on top of the bureau and stood by the bed where I watched Summer sleep. As I slipped the fancy cloth under my collar, adjusted the length, and made a tight knot at the front of my neck. The hanged man. I went into my office carrying a bottle of Listerine and listened to my phone messages as I rinsed my mouth with mouthwash. The machine was full and I deleted them each as I listened. Angry clients. I had taken their money, spent their money, and given them little in return. I found and chewed on a couple pieces of peppermint gum, feeling my mouth burn, and I combed my hair back. It was getting too long. There were dark rings and bloated sacks under my eyes as well. I was unraveling. I should qualify that by saying sometimes that is not always for the worst. But you know, at the time, it sure felt like it. I had a meeting to get to and plenty of time to kill before then. I went back into the bedroom to observe once again the beauty of that young woman who, for no good reason, was integral to my unraveling. Going to work, I said, knowing that she would be gone when I returned.